Good morning and welcome back to Tech Days Online, day two, DevOps. I'm Marcus Robinson, technical evangelist here at Microsoft in the UK. And with me, I've got Taryn Arora, who's shortly going to talk to us about VSTS and release pipelines. If you have any questions about any of the topics we're talking about today, please do tweet us using the hashtag TechDays. We've got a team of people in the room at the back, all the speakers that have been here today, ready and waiting to answer your questions. Okay.
All those geeks are being caffeinated, and there's plenty of free pastry inside as well, so I might just throw some questions at them.
I'm sure you'll be in there later.
Right. I'm Taryn Arora. I'm a MVP Visual Studio ALM, have been for 5 years, was nominated and awarded as the MVP of the year in 2014. I'm here today to talk about DevOps and focusing this session very much on release pipelines. So we'll get into the realm of what we'll cover in the session. But I hear a lot of customers ask, can I do more with release pipeline than just deployment? And I want to use this session to talk about, you know, the whole value chain, right, from not only deploying software, but deploying infrastructure, deploying documentation or automating documentation generation as well. And, you know, there are really no boundaries. Anything that you could do manually can be plugged in into the release pipeline as well. And that's really what I want to cover in this session.
Right.
So we'll split the session into two. I have a few slides that I want to cover off, and then after that, we'll just get our hands dirty with a demo.
Excellent.
Great. So brief introduction. I'm a manager for DevOps and Agile at Avanade. I have recently written a book on DevOps and ALM with TFS 2015. The book applies to VSTS, so if you like the session, you know where you have to head off to the links there. Order a copy, and hopefully that would help me retire and sip some margaritas on the beach next year. I do blog as well. You know, browse over to visualstudiogeeks.com. You'd find pretty much all the demos and the scripts for the demos available on the website. And if you're on Twitter, give us a shout. And if you are asking a question, hashtag TechDays, and the experts would get back to you shortly. So DevOps, right? You know, back in the days, devs and ops lived separately. There was always contention. Devs finished their work, threw it on the other side of the fence. The ops picked up, and it was a constant battle. But things are changing now. Dev and ops are working in synergy now, trying to deliver quicker, faster, better software, trying to automate together, trying to understand and cooperate with each other. And that's really what all DevOps is about. And the dev mentality is now changing. When the devs are coding up, they're thinking about the KPIs and, you know, the logs in a way as to how it'd be easier to kind of pull out the telemetry from the systems in operations. And you know, that's the kind of mind shift DevOps enforces IT houses and software teams to need to go through.
Yeah.
There are some few core concepts that, you know, are worth mentioning, I think Stuart covered a lot of these off in his session, but infrastructure as code is a big mind shift for a lot of people. Infrastructure traditionally has always been thought of tin and can, right? I need a server, I'm going to have to order a physical, or I'm going to have to provision a virtual. But it was still the concept of, sequential. I'll have to do this before I can, you know, my team can code up, deploy it, and so on and so forth. But that paradigm is changing now. Infrastructure is not being seen as tin and can. It's being seen as software itself, as code, something that can be versioned, something that can be audited, something that, you know, your peer can code review on, you can run tests on as well. And so that mind shift is great, because when you start seeing infrastructure as code, you can then plug it into your release pipelines to provision servers on the fly, use things like desired state configuration to get them to the state before you deploy your software on it and run the test. And being able to do that whole pipeline on demand means your software teams now are not held hostage by infrastructure operations team for server requirements. So that's how I see that concept of programmable infrastructure, infrastructure as code, really revolutionizing the DevOps game. Traditionally, ops teams would manage the server configuration using point-in-time scripts. So if I wanted to deploy IIS on a web server, or IIS on a server to make it a web server, there would be scripts that would go from assuming a base date of the OS, and then from that point onwards, there would be script to deploy IIS. And if the base date changed, those scripts would not function anymore. not ideal, very hard to manage and maintain. And over time, if you don't run that automation regularly, you'd find these scripts go out of date very quickly. And the day you need the automation, it doesn't work, and then people start going back to the manual workflow. So the desired state is what really needs to be managed. And things like DSL, things like PowerShell DSE, is a way to do it, where now the OS lets you compare the current state with the desired state or the to-be state, and then kind of work out the difference, and all the gap in there is bridged by the scripts it creates and to get to that point. So that's another thing worth mentioning. So, you know, the whole thing about VSTS is, you know, you've got an engine, which is the agent, and that agent can be used for continuous integration, for continuous deployment. But there's nothing really stopping you from using that automation engine to do anything. And when I say anything, this anything applies to being able to provision infrastructure, being able to send out email notifications, being able to put in manual intervention steps for someone to come in and manually check off or sign off, because for some organizations, that's still a prerequisite before releases can go out of the door. And other things, right? So if you look at the pipeline that I've got on the screen at the moment, a developer is checking in or committing code into TFS or VSTS in a Git repo or in a server-based version control repository. And then on the back of that, a trigger is initiated to do the code compile, the unit testing, the code analysis, the applying a version to the binaries, and then packaging that artifact up and serving that as an endpoint. Now, that endpoint can be consumed by a release. That endpoint can be consumed by another process like Jenkins or something else that runs in your organization. So VSTS is not locking you into the Microsoft toolchain. It's opening it up. There is better collaboration with other products. Should you go and use Octopus Deploy or TeamCity or Jenkins, it just plugs in with these tools as well. And vice versa, these tools plug into VSTS quite naturally as well. But from the point of having that artifact endpoint exposed, you could decide to trigger the release on the back of that. Now, release is much more than deployment, right? Deployment is just a small component of release, which means you're deploying your software. But in addition to that, you could deploy a test agent on that server and run your functional test, Selenium test, your performance test. And then on the back of that, even create a custom image by snapshotting it and delete the image if you don't need it going forward. But the whole release pipeline works on the concepts of environments. Now, in the screenshot there, in the slide, you can see I've got a staging environment and a live environment. The staging environment is where you're, running up or deploying software and running the process for every change that is done. But live is maybe more the place where you don't deploy infrastructure, but maybe just only deploy configuration changes. So the pipeline can be varied according to each environment that you deploy to. But in principle, teams are encouraged to keep the pipeline similar across environments, because then it allows you to practice it in one environment and run it up in another environment, and hopefully not get it wrong the next time. So enough talking. Let's get into a demo. We'll structure the demo by first looking at VSTS, some of the new advancements that have been announced and just rolled out, like the new build page, the new release page. Look at some of the new tasks that have been released. We'll look at the gallery of extensions that are available, and then run some demos to do the actual provisioning of VMs as well as deploy software on it.
Every time I sort of open VSTS, it seems like there's new features.
Yeah.
How do you keep up? How often do you find new features are appearing?
Yeah, and that goes back to how the Microsoft team has advanced by adopting the tools that they're selling themselves. So last year around, when I was at the MVP Summit, we had a one-to-one with Brian Harry, and this question came up where, the reply was, we are starting to dog food our own products. Our internal teams, like the Office team, the Windows team, are using VSTS to track their work, to track their code, which means the demands that come from these teams are huge, right? I mean, they're the biggest consumers of VSTS. And to just fit their requirements means you're probably catering to 90% of the market requirements already. It's hard. You're kind of doing a demo, and next day you're at a client side, and you can't find that option because it's been advanced or it's been moved out. So there is that. VSTS is bleeding edge now. There's new features every 3 weeks. Sometimes it's hard to keep up, but most of the time it's like, whoa, I love that feature. It's finally in there.
Yeah. I started using, is it MetaTasks?
MetaTasks are there. I'll briefly touch on that
as well.
I'll
let you get on with the demo.
Okay, let's do that. Okay, so that is VSTS. I've got a test project in there, Fabric M Fiber. That company has been fibered, has been marketed, has been sold, has been whatever, right? That's the demo piece. That's the demo company for pretty much every DevOps demo I've come across in the last few years. So this Fabricam project is set up. There's plenty of goodness. You'd see that the menu options have changed for starters. Earlier, you used to have like a hub, and underneath the hub, you had access to the pages. But because the options are increasing, it's kind of hard to accommodate in that infrastructure using the higher tool and the lower toolbar. And it's changing now where you've got these drop downs. And again, you have the option of customizing what you want to access via hot links and what you want to have in the second subset of menus. But again, it feels you're able to get to options and things that you're kind of interested in quicker. For example, the settings option now is available here. Previously, you had to click here. It would navigate you to the admin panel. And from there on, you had to dig into the project, the account, and to the team level. This keeps it more in the context. Okay, so navigate over to the build section. You see that the build page has been completely redone. One of the biggest feedbacks we had from customers was the build page got really busy when multiple teams were using a single team project to deliver a product. And I wouldn't blame them, because if you were doing any kind of software project or any team is doing a software project, they'd have at least five or six builds for maybe CI, for code analysis, for pull requests, for deployments, for releases. And times that by three teams or four teams, and you've got like 20 build definitions now. And it was hard to kind of mark things as favorite, but organize them in a structure. So the new page allows you four views. Leave the last one, XAML, because that's the old build system. We're not going to spend time on it. But the queued section is quite straightforward. All the builds that have been queued by anyone in that project would show up here. The ones that have had a spin on them is the mine and the all definition section. So any builds that you trigger or are related to your project would start showing up here. So if, as a matter of fact, you're working across five projects or five products or different projects within VSTS or different teams, all of your builds that you have had any involvement with will start to show up on this single page. So this becomes a quick access point to everything that revolves around you. The next page, which is the all definitions page, has finally got folders. Yeah, it took us 3 years to request for that feature, and that's finally arrived, where you can now define a folder and put all the builds into that folder. Now, in this case, I've got a TechDays UK folder, and I've got two build definitions in them. But if I wanted to go one level up and move one of the existing build definitions to a different folder, then I'm able to do that by just selecting this option here in the context menu. And it's great, right? I mean, again, you can kind of categorize your builds by functions, by teams, by purposes, and then just share that hot folder URL with someone rather than someone having to come in and search around to find the right build definition for themselves. Okay, so going back into the TechDays UK folder, you'd see the page has some changes now. It's not only giving you the status of the last build, but giving you the status of things that you would generally want answers to when you're looking at a build definition. Things like, what's the pass rate for the build? The pass rate is probably the number of builds run over the last 7 days. It's going to do an aggregation and tell you what's the general pass rate. It's going to tell you whether the tests were run, whether they were successful or not. You can see that in the default branch summary, because I'm using a Git repo, it's telling me that the Git repo is green because the changes have successfully been through a CI build process. So let's navigate into this specific build definition that I have. Again, this summary page is not just giving you the summary for the last build, but giving you the summary for the last seven days worth of builds done by this build definition. And again, you can go into history to kind of see the historic runs in detail and who they were run by. So a lot of useful information here. If we go into the edit section, let me show you the build pipeline that I have in here. I've got a very simple build pipeline, which is taking the code from the Git repo that I have, which is specified in the repository section here. And then it's restoring the NuGet packages related to that build, related to that code base. And then this clever extension, which is not out of the box, but provided by the community. And you can install it by going into the Visual Studio Marketplace. We'll go there in a second. What it does is it does a full scan on the code base, finds the properties file, assembly info, and replaces the assembly info pattern with the build ID. So if I'm running a build and this build is been set up to version as 1.something.something.something, then it would append the same version to the DLLs as well. So when you serve that package up, all your DLLs for the project or for the code base are versioned with the same number. So it's a very easy way of managing that kind of end-to-end traceability from code to build to release. And then what we're doing here is we're running SonarQube. Now you'd say SonarQube and VSTS, when did that happen? But that story about better together, you know, opening up the platform and enabling that linking with third-party tools or tools that are famous in the community is something that the product team is looking into massively and adopting. And you know, it shouldn't come to you as a surprise, but SonarQube is the de facto for technical debt management, technical debt identification, and technical debt resolution, you know, managing that life cycle. And rather than Microsoft going off and building their own technical debt management solution, they've opened up the integration with SonarQube. And in fact, all the runners for C# and .NET are based on the Rosalind rule set now, and they're pretty much open source. So you know, if you don't like a rule set or want to enhance it, you know where to go and look on GitHub. So that, again, what we're doing is we're plugging in SonarQube. So when the code execution gets to this point, it's going to start the SonarQube code analysis, leveraging the Rosalind rule set that we have across the code, and then push the analysis results after the test execution to the SonarQube server. And you know, because the integration is in place, you don't have to like hard code stuff. If I click on the manage link, you would see I've got a endpoint configuration through which I can specify the SonarQube server details. So there we go, update server configuration. So you know, you would just specify the connection name, the URL of your SonarQube server, your username, and a token or a password, and that's what it will use to connect to SonarQube. And it's a two-way integration where if the analysis fails in SonarQube, you can effectively fail the build as well. So it's not one way.
I think the key thing is that Visual Studio Team Services enables all these third-party products and services to plug into it. It's not just narrowed down to just use Microsoft technologies. We can use whatever we want.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's great because when you go to customers, they're like, we have licenses for this product we bought last year. No, we can't get away from not using this product, but we love VSTS. We want to use some of the features VSTS offers, but we still want to use these other products. And by enabling that integration, you know, VSTS kind of becomes the Uber platform that can be used for the orchestration, plugging in into these other tools to drive the automation and the value chain delivery.
Yeah, and having extensions in the marketplace means we don't have to build things from scratch. We don't have to write our own scripts. We just pop in the parameters, off we go.
Yeah, yeah. And then, so coming back to the pipeline, you know, we finished the SonarQube analysis. And then after that point, the DLLs are kind of bundled together into an artifact and served up as an endpoint. Now this endpoint, as I said, could be consumed by anything pretty much. So that's the build definition we have. Let's quickly navigate to the marketplace. In the marketplace, you can see there are a bunch of extensions. Now, till last week, all the extensions were free, but there is a commerce solution available whereby the extension developers can monetize their extensions. And you'd see some of these extensions are paid now. There are free versions, but there are paid versions as well with offering more features. I think it's a great way to encourage people to create more extensions and enhance these extensions and manage these extensions and provide an enterprise experience by offering paid subscriptions. But the gallery is growing every day. I come back in and I'm like, oh my God, we've got, you know, Octopus, we've got Agile cards, we've got personas, we've got, so anything that you're looking for, there's usually an extension available for that, whether it's timesheeting, it's you know, work item visualization, it's folder creation, it's zipping files, unzipping files, pretty much everything, you know, I find that there is an extension of some kind available for that. And Microsoft's using the same platform themselves to release enhancements to the product. For example, you would see on the screen here that Code Search, which is an add-on to VSTS to search through the entire Git or TFVC code repository that you have is now available as an extension. You can install that extension. Similarly, exploratory testing. Now, this is going to be free, but for example, package management in the future might become a paid offering. So if you don't want it, you don't have to pay for it. But if few users in your organization need it, then you can kind of buy the per user license for it. But mostly MSDN licenses cover off all of these extensions into the product and paid for.
Yeah, I noticed package management. I got a new tab in VSTS, I think very recently, that says package with a little asterisk.
Yeah.
Does that mean it's in preview or something, I believe?
So package management was in preview for a while, and it's being offered up as an extension. I think the reason the asterisk is there because they haven't yet finalized what the costing model for it is going to look like. So yeah, pretty much preview, come and have a taste of it, and then once the pricing is announced, it'd probably be in GA.
Okay.
All right, so that's the marketplace. Now, it's not just developers releasing stuff. There is stuff being released by other product teams, so other Microsoft ecosystem product teams as well. The one that's recently, I'd say, been released about 3 months back is the Azure DevTest Labs task. Now, if you're not familiar with Azure DevTest Labs, Azure DevTest Labs is a wrapper around DevTest VMs, allowing you to have governance policies, control for VMs that dev teams and test teams use. So let's take an example. I've got a dev team and you know they need a few VMs. Traditionally, I'd provision the few VMs for them and I'd lock away certain permissions so that they can't really amend the VMs. But then you know I'd start worrying whether the devs and the tests switched off the VMs after they used it because I was incurring a per-minute charge on these VMs. Sometimes the devs do, sometimes the devs forget, resulting in cost. But the DevTest Labs are addressing that use case by providing you a wrapper around the virtual machines whereby you get all these policies out of the box, policies to say start the lab VMs at this time, shut down all the lab VMs at this time, and you can obviously define exceptions to that rule set, but it's a very easy way of managing that infrastructure. So if you wanted to limit the size of the VMs that can be created or the number of VMs that a dev or test could create, as well as being able to keep a tap on pricing for that lab, decommissioning the lab if it goes above a certain price point, all of that is provided as a wrapper around this virtual infrastructure. And I've worked with a lot of teams now that are using DevTest Labs as really the single purpose solution for all their dev and test requirements. So looking at the adoption, Microsoft has released an extension for DevTest Labs that allows you to orchestrate provisioning of virtual machines in the DevTest Labs. And it's really cool because with DevTest Labs, you can create a base image for a development purpose, right? Or you can create a base OS and say these are the DSC scripts that need to go into that server to make it a compatible dev image or customize it to a certain extent for a certain product. And now you can orchestrate the entire process from VSTS. And we'll get into that in 5 minutes, but effectively taking your VSTS build and release engine, which is already in place, feeding it the Azure endpoint and the RGT resource group template or the JSON template. Through this extension, you're able to securely connect to Azure, deploy the virtual machine, deploy a DSC PowerShell script on it to get it to a state that you need for your software development purposes, deploy the solution or the code on it, deploy a test agent on it, run your tests, and have that pipeline triggered as and when, on demand, as you need to. Now, in the previous sessions, Stuart covered Puppet and Chef, right? I mean, these are great tools. But if you're using, if you have simple use cases for environment provisioning in Azure, then you can get away just by using the VSTS agent to do the infrastructure deployment in Azure without having to get deep into using Chef or Puppet.
Yeah, for the actual deployment. How would you handle the testing of the infrastructure?
Okay, so if you're comfortable with PowerShell, then I'm sure you can script some of that. But there isn't natively a testing solution available for testing the infrastructure through VSTS. But yeah, that's I think worth speaking to the product team about to get some feedback going. So I've installed the DevTest extension in here. Let's go into the release hub, and I'll talk a little bit about the pipeline I have in place that involves the DevTest extension. So as you can see in the pipeline, I've got two different environments, staging and live. The staging environment has the create Azure DevTest lab VM task in there. And effectively, I'm providing it the path to a template that I've created. Now, traditionally, creating a template for deploying infrastructure requires a little bit of a skill set. It's to put it in a raw form, it's kind of hard for a beginner to come in and start provisioning JSON templates to deploy infrastructure. And to reduce the entry barrier to that, what Microsoft did was you get a new feature within the Azure portal. For any VM or any infrastructure you provision within Azure, on the settings blade, you see an option called automation. If you click on it, it shows you the JSON template for the infrastructure that you've just deployed, which gives you a bit of a headway, right? Now, you can take that template, parameterize it, customize it a little bit, and then check it into VSTS, and next thing, you can start using it for deploying the infrastructure. So just to prove that it isn't really hard, I'm going to navigate into the Azure Dev Test Labs. And you would see that within the lab, I've got an option to create a new virtual machine. Now, I'm just waiting for the gallery to load up, but I've got an image, or you could choose any of the existing images in the gallery, and I'm going to just give it a name, specify a username, create a random password.
So how did you create this image?
We'll get into that in 1 second. But if you see here, we've got the option at the bottom of the blade, which is View ARM Template. And if I click on this, it's effectively generated a template with the definition of pretty much everything. So I've got a version of the lab name, the username, the password, the image ID, the size, the username, the password, secure password. All of that is specified here, and you can see the parameters here. So you could just simply copy this across into Notepad or Visual Studio Code and check it in into VSTS to start deploying virtual machines in Azure Dev Test Labs, but just using this definition. And if you see, that's what I've done here. I've taken that definition, I've just parameterized it by adding a few more options, and just using this now to not only deploy the VM, but deploying other resources on top of it, like artifacts. And these artifacts could be domain joining. These artifacts could be punching holes in the firewall to do some NSGs and so on and so forth. Now, coming back to your question, how did I create the base image in the first place? The Dev Test Labs give you a great option now, which is let's have a look here in the configuration, custom image. So what you could do, you've got two options there. One option is you provision a VM, you log on to it, you install whatever software you need to, and then you come out of it and say, create me a custom image from this VM. And what it would do is effectively run a sysprep command to trash out all the profiles that it's created, but sysprep the image so you've got a copy of it now that you can provision new VMs with. And then it adds that to the library. Now, traditionally, it was possible to create sysprep images, but the process of adding them to blob storage had to be done by yourself. The process of someone's opening up PowerShell and running the command and sometimes getting it wrong costed you because the VM was destroyed, but it was in sysprep correctly. But having that functionality again in the browser, in the Azure portal, means the entry barrier is all the more lower. So, you know, maybe a junior resource who doesn't have a lot of ops skills can still come into Dev Test Labs, provision a VM, run some DSC scripts, or manually install software and say, create me a custom image off of it. So the entry point to getting the base image is easier, and then scaling that base image to create more VMs is still easier by using or leveraging the automation that we have in place using VSTS.
Great.
So I've basically taken this a code that we just saw, which is the resource group template, and let me open up the code here. As you can see in the repository, I've created a repository for infrastructure. And within here, you can see the actual RGT, the ARM template in place. And so if I go back to the release for this task, you would see the template name, I've specified the path to the infrastructure, to the exact location where the template is. So again, quite easy to set this up from scratch. Right, and then after this, what I'm doing in this pipeline is I am running some PowerShell script to create a shared folder on that VM once it's provisioned. And then on that shared folder, I'm copying some software files. And then after that, I'm deploying IIS. I'm not only deploying IIS, but deploying the bindings, creating an app pool, and then deploying a test agent to run Selenium functional tests. And then after this, I've got a manual intervention step. Now, manual intervention step has been a new and recent introduction in VSTS. And it was a popular ask from customers that, you know, in our release process, we've got these steps, but after this, someone actually logs on to a VM to manually validate that the license key has been correctly specified before the next set of steps are run. And because VSTS didn't have this option, people were starting to create separate pipelines to execute half the workflow, but it kind of felt broken. With the introduction of manual intervention, the release pauses at that point in time, and a notification is sent out for whoever is responsible for manually intervening can come in and kind of approve or reject based on their assessment, and then the release just picks up off from there and starts executing further.
Great. So is this out of the box, or is it an extension that we add from the marketplace?
This one is out of the box.
Great.
And it's free. Sure. So manual intervention's done. And then, you know, if you are running this as a one-off process, you could keep the image in place. Or if you are running this as an automation and you just want to delete the custom image after the tests are run, then the Azure DevTest Labs tasks also provide you these two steps, whereby you can create a snapshot of the image and then in the end just delete the image. So without further ado, let's trigger a build. And I've set up the integration from the build to the release. So as soon as the build finishes, it's going to trigger a note. It's going to trigger the release process, which is then going to provision the VM, you know, and run the pipeline as we just talked through it. So this is the actual build definition. Let's click on queue new build and click OK. And so what's happening at this point is it's basically taking the set of tasks we have defined in the build pipeline, reaching out to an agent in the cloud. This is, I'm using the hosted agent in this case, but again, you know, you're off free to use a custom agent by setting it up on-prem or in the cloud on a VM yourself. But effectively, all it's doing is it's taking the definition, it's packaging it up, it's putting it out to the agent. The agent is taking the definition, making a connection to VSTS, downloading the source code from the Git repo, and in this case, further progressing to do the SonarQube code analysis, versioning, and so on and so forth. So we'll let this run for a while in the background, while I'm going to show you one more thing. Now, earlier on in the talk, I said, in your release process, if you wanted to automate the document creation, then that's also possible. And so while that build is running in the background, we'll briefly talk about the automation of document generation. A lot of the teams have code annotations whereby, you know, they're writing some code, but along with that, they're writing some comments as well. Now, there are two schools of thought. One say, if you write good code, you don't need to document it. If your code is backed by unit tests, you know, that's documentation in itself. Some of the other teams where code is not touched a lot or they have a lot of legacy code, they tend to leave comments in the code. Now, I'm not going to try and battle which side is correct, but if you're on the side where you're doing a lot of code annotations, then it kind of makes sense to leverage the code annotations to create the documentation. And the way it's done is you simply use the DeOxygen extension, which is quite famous in the C++ camp, and it's now becoming popular in the other communities like the Java community and the .NET community. You take this extension. It runs on the code base that you have in place using a settings file where you can specify, you know, which type of files do you want to consume in the code in the document generation versus which ones you want to ignore, what kind of format do you need, how do you want to template it. But again, the entry barrier is low. You don't really have to create a crazy configuration file. The one out of the box does the job anyway, but you have the option to go and configure it if you want to. And so DeOxygen now takes the code, scans through it, finds any code annotation, XML comments, understands the linking from functions, classes, understands inheritance, draws up diagrams, and does all of that for you. Let's trigger a build and see how it works. So queue new build, click OK. The build's hooked up. It's downloading the code. As you can see on your screen, it's...
So this one's using a private agent, not
this,
the host
this
agent?
One's using a private agent, spot on. And you know, for the demo, I thought if I want to show both of them, I better have two agents in place. And you see, it's just going through the code base now and extracting the comments from it, extracting the understanding of the linkage in the code, and then it generates a PDF from it.
Okay.
But then again, you know, it may generate a PDF and put it in a file share. Who's going to look at it? No one. But this extension is really clever. What it does is it creates a new hub within the code hub, a new page within the code hub called Documents. And all the documentations that are generated by this extension are kind of submitted in the Documents page. And so you can go to the document page, select the build definition, select the build number, and see the documentation, which means now, as the code evolves and you have a CI process in place to do the code continuous integration, at the same time, it can generate the documentation for you. So you've got a direct linking from code to CI to documentation, and you can see the evolution of both. Now, let's navigate to the document hub in this case. If I go into the code section, I see a document page now, and
so that appeared when you installed the extension, or when it first executed?
When it first runs.
When it first runs. I've not seen this, so quite
right.
Excited.
This is just hot off the shelf now, so hot off the press, I should say. Quite a recent extension, and I'd encourage people to use it. So just waiting for it to navigate into the document page. Ooh, no internet connection.
I'm doing okay with demos so far today. Fingers crossed it's going to come back.
Just waiting for it to work. Do we have a problem with the Wi-Fi?
I don't know if we do or not.
Let me just... Oh, okay,
there
it's back. Alrighty.
Start to get a bit nervous.
So. Okay, brilliant. So you see, you come into the document section, and it's quite aligned to the code hub itself. And you can select the build definition. Now, the build that we ran was called fabricamcore.documents. And it's just rendered the latest available. But again, you can come in and select a previous build that was run to see historic documentation. And you know, it's generated 62 pages of worth of documentation for you, and some of it is relevant, and you can of course enrich it by adding more meaningful comments. But things like, you know, getting the function names, getting the function definitions, getting the parameters, seeing the inheritance, seeing the linkage in the code, sometimes it's just useful for newer teams or support teams to come and have a look at this. And being able to so cheaply generate this documentation, I see value in doing it anyways.
That's very, very useful.
Yeah, great. So that's documentation. Coming back to the other build that we had triggered, let's go into the builds. The release build here. So that release build passed. It's just completed 3 minutes ago. This should have triggered a release. So if I go into the release section, you would see in the release section that a new release has been queued. And we're just going to, it's just probably waiting for an agent. OK, so the build agent successfully completed the build. And on the back of that, it triggered the release now. The build is, you know, the build is complete. The release is going to be in flight as soon as the release agent becomes available. But again, you know, if you have a bigger operation, then provisioning more agents is something you should definitely look at. Okay, so it's picked up. The agent's picked up the release now. It's going to go through the process. We'll let it run for a while, but effectively, it's just going to work through the pipeline to provision the VM and then run the rest of the pipeline on it. While that's working. Something very quickly worth mentioning is the meta tasks. Now, this is a new introduction. Traditionally, when you create a few steps which become an established process for deploying something, say a web app, and then a new project comes in and says, oh, I like those steps, can I copy them? And then they take those steps and recreate them in their build pipeline. Now, you've got two versions of the same steps being run in two separate builds by two separate people. Another smart, clever dev comes in and enhances the first project's build steps, but the second ones can't take advantage of it because they don't even have visibility as to that's been enhanced. So to avoid this duplication, what Microsoft has done is, in VST, has given you a meta task, which means you can take a bunch of steps that you've defined to do an activity and package them as a task yourself, And that task can then be consumed by other projects or other teams. And naturally, when you enhance that task, everyone benefits from it. Again, you're building a dependency, but it's a traceable dependency where you know the consumers of the task as well. And any enhancements there, the teams can benefit from. Again, you know, from an ops point of view, if you're putting in a password for deploying a website on a server, you don't want to start to share that password with every team. You can plug that into the meta task, and kind of everyone can benefit from consuming it directly. And setting up meta tasks is very simple. Just take a build pipeline or a release pipeline. Let's take the one that we have.
I used this for the first time last week. You know, when you're first creating pipelines and you repeat the steps in various environments, then you find, oh, I wish I'd done that in a different way.
Yeah.
And you go and change it, then you've got to go and remember to change it in every single environment.
Spot on.
Whereas this removes that, so saves a lot of time.
Yeah. So you can select a couple of steps and say, create a task group, and then you can specify the name of the task, and that becomes the meta task. But you see at the bottom here, it identifies that there is a variable being used here. And so if you wanted to parameterize that variable, you can do that here. So it's just not like hard coding or collecting a bunch of tasks. It gives you the ability to group them and parameterize them further, which I think is really valuable. The thing to note is, at the moment, there is work being done on the meta tasks to enhance them further. At the moment, you can create meta tasks, but you cannot delete them.
Right.
So just be wary of that when you go off and try and create a meta task for everything that you've done in your organization. Is that feature to delete them is in flight, is coming soon, is what I've heard from the product team. All right, so let's go back to the release, which is in progress now. We can see that the Azure file copy task has been run. Let's quickly navigate across to the Azure portal and look at the dev test lab and look at all virtual machines. And you would see that although I already had two VMs in the dev test lab, the third one is just being created now, and it's being created using the release task that is just running. So if I click on this release task, you'd be able to see that it's creating the VM 99, which is starting to show up here. And then after it creates it, it's going to run the DSC scripts and then deploy the software ultimately on it. So just to quickly iterate, release pipeline is much more than just deployment. And there are no boundaries in what you can automate, whether it's document creation, whether it's deploying infrastructure, whether it's deploying software, running functional tests, doing anything, sending an email to your CIO saying, I've done a brilliant job. You can even automate that as part of the release pipeline if you wanted to. So it's important to start looking at it from that point of view rather than just thinking about it as a dead pipeline to deploy software. The other thing worth recapping about is, VSTS is not locking you in into just using VSTS. VSTS can become an Uber tool and can hook up with things like Jenkins, with things like TeamCity, Octopus Deploy. And if you go to the marketplace, you'd see the extension for all of these products is available in the marketplace. Last time around in Tech Days, I think it was in March or April.
Earlier
this year, I did a similar presentation for VSTS, but I was using Octopus Deploy to do the actual deployment. So even that support was in place 6 months ago, and it's only getting better by the day. So again, it's better together. It's not a vendor lock by any means. And the third thing worth mentioning is, in order to excel at DevOps, you need to start looking at infrastructure automation and not just think of managing the scripts, but managing the state of the infrastructure. I think by doing that, you kind of open yourself up to use any cloud and on-prem as well, right? There's nothing stopping you from creating that automation to deploy infrastructure on-prem or manage the state of that infrastructure on-prem, and then just simply take that and run that up in the cloud as well. So that's a great way to accelerate your cloud journey as well.
That's excellent. Thank you.
Brilliant. Right, so that's really all I had to present. This session was standing between me and my vacation. I'm heading off to Kathmandu next to do a trek in the Everest region, so.
Very jealous. Okay, whereas we're gonna take a break for lunch and we'll be back in an hour's time when we're gonna look at the sessions we've got this afternoon. We've got a session from Simon Sabin on data DevOps. We've got a session on testing with Danny Crone, and we've got Elton Stoneman who's gonna talk about containers.
Brilliant.
See you later.